The unruffled rhythm of Ray Lynch's Clouds Below Your Knees signifies that it's Thursday, 10 p.m., and time for So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston that is devoted entirely to storytelling, right here on commercial-free, listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM. The coolest place on your dial where we spotlight a variety of tellers, from starters to stars, who share at least one thing in common. Each is an extraordinary person who takes us on a profound and sometimes fanciful journeys with remarkable stories, from heart-wrenching narratives to enchanting folk tales, then return us safely to the present. If you could not tell, I am your host, Roxy Russell, sitting in for Dr. Hank, because he's taking my aunt, who has a special birthday today, on a special date. So happy birthday, Aunt Peggy. And I want to welcome Wally James for helping me tonight as I try to keep up the pace of this great show. Thank you so much, Wally.
Glad to be here, Roxy.
Last week, Brendan Burkshiel amused us with his tale about his prank 911 call, followed by a charming story about school, one of those memorable moments frozen in time. Like Brendan and guests on upcoming show, tonight's terrific teller is one I found at the Moth, a very cool event located at Stereo Live at 6400 Richmond here in Houston. She is Liz Rodwell, a doctoral candidate in the Department of Anthropology. Her research is emergent forms of interactive and social television content in Japan. She says her dissertation takes up almost all of her energy these days, which I would assume, but her love for storytelling finds its way into her life as often as time and her dissertation advisor allows. Liz, hello!
Hi, how it's are great you? To be here.
Yay, I'm so glad you're here. And if any of my questions make no sense or the show doesn't go well at all, we're blaming it on Hank because he wrote this entire script.
Definitely. I feel comfortable with that since he's a fellow academic.
Yes, blaming it on your teachers.
I won't cite him in the future.
Liz, the Moth is sort of like the comedy workshop of storytellers. The Moth starts with a story theme. Tellers sign up, and when their name is called, they get their tell a story for no more than 5 minutes. Now, how did you become interested in telling stories at the Moth? Because I don't know if I'm the best storyteller, let alone stand up in front of people and tell it.
Well, the truth is, I do love telling stories. I think all anthropologists do, at least all the anthropologists I know do. And I decided to do the Moth as a fan of the podcast, as a fan of the show in general, and also because I was trying to conquer a terrible fear of public speaking. And I thought, what's the most horrible public speaking situation I could imagine? When I walked into the room, the giant room that the Moth is hosting, mm-hmm. I thought, that's pretty much my worst nightmare right there. It's this enormous room. There are so many people in there. There's balconies filled with people. That's not cool.
I was shocked when I first went there. I was like, oh my gosh, there's no way we're going to get through all of these people telling stories.
Yeah, and you're just up there with a mic and nothing else, no notes.
It's scary. And then they also have themes, correct? So I was at one, and it was vices, which I thought was really cool. And so what are some of the other themes that have been featured that you remember most of?
Let's see. I think there was Love Hurts recently. So that was the Valentine's Day one.
Oh.
So there were some really good stories from that. So let's see. Before that, vices. And then there was Home as well was a recent one.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And the themes, it seems, can be consistent around the country, but sometimes they differ. Sometimes Houston goes out on a limb, or someone else, you know, Los Angeles goes out on a limb. So I think Love Hurts wasn't done in that many places around the country, but I guess they decided Houstonians were hurting.
Yeah, it was so hurt.
Yeah.
So also, they have judges as well.
Yeah.
Now, I've noticed that the judges were a part of the crowd, so what do you think, since the crowd is the judges, what appeals most to the judges to make, to choose a winner? Have you found?
Well, you know, I think a sort of natural good story arc is really important. I know for me, it's so much about getting over this fear of public speaking. Sometimes I forget to pace my stories, and so there is really no beginning, middle, and end. There's no climax. There's no excitement. there's kind of just me meandering on down this little path. And So I think the judges naturally respond to the things that we all respond to when listening to stories, which is, you know, is this interesting? Does this make me wonder what's going to happen next? Mm-hmm. Like, does it inspire any sort of emotional reaction in us? You know, you have to be careful, though, because if it's too tear-jerky, I think.
Yeah. I mean, the last thing you want to do is be your favorite because everyone feels sorry for you. But
yeah, you don't want the crowd going, aw, too much.
Oh, man, I guess we have to let them win. Yeah. No, not at all. We don't want that. So let's get to your first story. Now, your first story is your laptop getting stolen in Japan.
Stolen, yeah.
And that seems like my biggest fear because if I was a grad student, the last thing I would want is my laptop stolen.
Well, it's not as bad as it sounds. But
okay, well, how about you tell it and reaffirm me that it's not as bad.
Okay, so the reason it's not as bad as it sounds was because while I was doing my dissertation fieldwork in Japan, I wound up having to buy a new laptop. So I needed to essentially unload the old one to kind of recoup some of the costs. Because I'm a student. So I did what I would do in Houston. I put it on Craigslist. There actually is a Craigslist Tokyo. So I immediately had somebody interested, and he offered to pay my somewhat exorbitant asking price. So although he lived a little bit far away, I thought this is workable. Until I realized, okay, he's an hour each way from where I lived in Tokyo, and the tickets would cost me around the equivalent of $40. So just, you know, it just didn't seem doable. It would mean taking a day away from research. So my then boyfriend Takashi said, well, why don't you mail it? You just get some proof of ID from the guy and go ahead and mail the laptop to him. I wouldn't have done this in the U.S., but he was very persuasive. So I did. I mailed the laptop to this guy. I got a picture, an image of his foreign registration card. I had one of those too. So I thought, you know, I can always go to the police if he doesn't pay me. There wouldn't really be a story if he paid me though. So yeah, the guy didn't pay for the laptop. So I spent a couple of weeks begging, pleading, threatening this guy via text message to try to get my laptop paid for. And nothing was working. I threatened to get the guy deported, so I had the power to do it. I mean, as one foreigner living in Japan to another, I thought this was the scariest thing I could think of to threaten. But at any rate, nothing happened. He didn't send me money. So the day before I was supposed to leave Tokyo to come back to Houston, Takashi said, you know, this has been really bothering you. You've been complaining about this for weeks. Why don't we go to Yokohama and where the guy lived, and go to the police. So, you know, I got, again, talked into it by Takashi. I hadn't been willing to go before, but I was suddenly, you know, it was the principle of the thing, so off we went, and we did go to the police in Yokohama, and they said they did not want to get involved in a dispute between two foreigners involving a foreign website. Craigslist sounded pretty sketchy to them by the time we were done describing it. So they wanted nothing to do with the whole thing. So I thought the matter was just done, over. We had to go back home. Takashi said, we have his address. Let's go get your laptop. I mean, I had seen a picture of this guy's ID. He looked like he could kill us both. So then I thought, this is a guy who steals laptops, doesn't pay for them. He's not going to be nice. But we went to the guy's neighborhood by taxi. And I've never seen a neighborhood quite like this elsewhere in Japan. It looked a bit like Camden, New Jersey, actually. And so, you know, we got really lost trying to find this guy's place. We finally found it. I stood outside just sort of quaking. And Takashi said, well, I'm going to call him and tell him we're outside. As the phone was ringing, he realized, wait, she's been talking to this guy in English, and I don't speak English. But he was pretty determined, so he managed to get out when the guy answered, you thief laptop, before getting really frustrated and switching to Japanese, asking the guy in Japanese if he spoke Japanese, which apparently he did, because then Takashi was suddenly telling him in Japanese, well, you know, we're downstairs, we're here for the laptop, we're not leaving without it, and the guy said, well, I'm at work, but I'll be there in an hour and we can talk. So Takashi and I, we waited nearby for an hour. And when we returned about a block from this guy's apartment, I chickened out. I couldn't do it. I was just afraid this guy was going to kill us or worse, be angry. So I kind of ran around the corner and ducked into a doorway. And Takashi went off. And the next time I peeked around the corner, he was gone. So I started texting him. Where are you? Are you okay? What's happened? Nothing. I waited. As I waited in this doorway, I realized, you know, men passing by were giving me very strange looks, and I finally stepped outside and looked up and realized I was standing in the doorway of a house of prostitution. Oops. I'm sure leaning against the doorway, I looked sort of sketchy, but... So, you know, I peeked around the corner again, and just as I did, a couple of police cars came roaring around the corner, and... you know, screeched to a stop in front of this building. So I ran back and hid in my little doorway, thinking, oh my God, they've killed each other. Somebody's drawn a knife. Somebody's dead. And waited some more. I don't know how much time passed. Peeked around the corner, nothing. Police cars, nothing. Finally, Takashi emerged, walking toward me, smiling. And as he approached, I saw he had a big bag, and I wondered, okay, what is this? Of course, it was the laptop. And I said, what happened? You know, what went on in the apartment? What's up with the police? He said, oh, I don't know anything about the police. Like, they weren't there for us. No, I'm sorry. Sorry it took so long. I wasn't checking my phone. You know, we just got to talking. He's a really nice guy. I met his kid and his wife. They're great. Of course, your laptop's in the bag, and I think I'm going to invite this guy over sometime. He's a really cool guy, actually. So, that's how Takashi became friends, now Facebook friends, with my laptop. But I got the laptop back. So.
That is all that is important. That was
and
a great...
nobody died.
You have a lot more courage than to get... Well, you were talked into a lot more courage than I would ever have. This is Roxy Russell sitting in for Dr. Hank, and you are enjoying guest teller Liz Rodwell share her tales of woe on So What's Your Story? Well, not really woe. On KPFT 90.1 FM Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 90.3 in Livingston. Okay, so I love your next story. It's about supernatural experience in college, correct?
Yes.
Okay, tell us a little bit about it without giving it away.
Well, when you go to a really old university, there are some spooky things that happen every time, every now and again in the dorms. So
oh my
this
goodness.
Is about one of those.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so before you tell your story, we have a list of top 10 most haunted colleges in the United States. Because Dr. Hank insists on doing sophisticated and impressive research appropriate for our guests. So, here we go. According to U.S. World and News Report, number 10 is Penn State, number 9 is Bradford College, University of Notre Dame is 8, then the University of Georgia is number 7. I know people who go to University of Georgia because I'm from Georgia and it explains a lot. Followed by Montclair State at number 6, St. Joseph's is 5, Drew University is 4, Cal State at Camarillo is 3. University of Illinois comes in at number 2. And at number 1, the most haunted college in America is Ohio University in Athens, Ohio. Part of the campus used to be an insane asylum where primitive treatments were a commonplace. So, hello. Congratulations, Ohio University. So now that we're...
Oh, my gosh.
Now that we're all nice and warmed up, do you want to tell us your scary story?
Sure. Okay. And my university, my alma mater, was not on that list.
Okay.
So, although they're all from near my parents' house.
Creepy.
I don't know. Half of them are. Okay. So my freshman year of college, I stayed after the classes had ended. There was kind of a week before graduation, the graduation ceremony, where anybody involved in the ceremony could stay in the dorms, but everybody else had to go. So I had a connection, I had a friend in the band, and so there were 4 of us in her room total. 2 of the folks staying in her room were I guess, fancied themselves amateur ghost hunters and were really interested in the supernatural. And then there was one really hardcore skeptic friend of mine, and then me just sort of in the middle somewhere, kind of up for anything, I suppose. So we were all sitting around one night, you know, and this dorm had gotten very spooky with half of the lights out and, you know, essentially nobody in there. We were, I think, the only people in that dorm then. So we thought, let's go exploring. Let's see what we can find in this dorm. So the dorm was shaped like a U, and we went up to the fifth floor, I think it was the fifth, where for some reason, mid-floor, the bar of the U just sort of stopped, and there was this really weird brick wall. And of course, there were stories about why it stopped there abruptly, but we're looking around, and one of the girls is saying, you know, I feel spooky vibes here. And, you know, the other friend of mine is going, oh my God, I can't believe I got talked into this. You know, rolling her eyes. And I'm feeling really lightheaded, just feeling really queasy and horrible. And I say to my skeptic friend, you know, can we go outside? I feel horrible. So she took me downstairs. We sat outside and it was pretty bizarre, but I don't remember this particular part of the story because, I was quite lightheaded, but she said that I was giving her this horrible, murderous look, and what was worse, mumbling at her in Latin, which I can't necessarily explain because I don't speak Latin, and, I still don't speak Latin. So, at any rate, the other two came down and, apparently, you know, witnessed me behaving really strangely, but, you know, as far as I know, there's sort of a gap. We went to bed, and the next day they said, you know, let's go talk to this one professor of ours who, he taught courses on the history of magic and was known to be a practicing magician, actually, one of my favorite university professors of all time. And so we went to his office, and I was shaking like a leaf. I was just really uncomfortable. I don't know what was freaking me out so much, but I was having panic attacks in this professor's office. He said, you know, why don't I come back with you guys to the dorm tonight and check it out, you know, at least see if anything's going on. It sounds interesting enough and, you know, can't hurt. So that night he did come back with us to the dorm. We went back kind of poking around a bunch of floors before making our way to the fifth, and, you know, everything was, it was a dorm. You know, we were looking at blank walls and standing there, and everybody else is fine, and I start getting lightheaded again and nauseous, and I'm sure some people listening have some perfectly reasonable explanations for this, but at any rate, I said, I need to get out of here, and my skeptic friend, not so much of a skeptic anymore, said, I'm not going downstairs with her. So the professor said, well, let's all go outside. Maybe I can, I don't know, maybe a little fresh air will do Liz some good. So we went and sat outside. It was a nice summer day in New England, and summer night, I should say. And as we sat out there, I guess, you know, I really did love this professor, but I just felt like, oh my God, I hate him so much at that moment. You know, I wanted to kill the man. You know, I was absolutely furious with him for some reason. And, you know, he was sort of smiling benignly at the way I was looking at him, but, you know, again, with the Latin, too. And so he said, you know, do you mind if I say a few words? Like, you know, if you're feeling lightheaded, can't hurt. It's just a little incantation. I'm really curious to see if it would do anything. So he started, well, basically, I guess, chanting and tying a red cord around one of my wrists and a yellow cord around the other. I still don't entirely know the meaning of this, but so, you know, as he did, I'm thinking, I just remember the part of my brain that wasn't dizzy and coming up with weird Latin, was thinking, this is so stupid. but, you know, as he did, you know, it was stupid, 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 and then all of a sudden there was this intense blasting sensation at the top of my head, like nothing I've ever felt before. And I didn't say anything, but, you know, everybody kind of stopped and looked at me like, whoa, okay. And the professor said, well, I didn't expect that to work so quickly. And the other three students were looking at me like, oh, no, that was so weird. And I felt suddenly completely fine. You know, no lightheadedness, no dizziness whatsoever. I still don't know what he did, but I now kind of know why he had a reputation. And I also don't know what to make of that experience or ghost stuff in general now. So, you know, scientific explanations welcome.
Oh, my goodness. So it kind of alluded to the fact that you might have had, I want to say, been from this.
Yeah, very strange. I mean, I hadn't seen The Exorcist at that time. There was no thrashing, thankfully, or throwing up. But, I still don't know what happened. My skeptic friend, 10 years later, God, more than 10 years later now, says, I'm sure there was a gas leak or something of the sort.
Oh, my gosh, no!
I'm sure it was just the old building, so.
Oh, my goodness, that is terrifying. That is terrifying. Oh, my gosh. See, that's, so I'm just freaked out like that so easily.
Don't stay in school, kids.
Don't stay in school, or at least not a haunted one. This is Roxy Russell, and you are listening to Moth Teller Liz Rodwell on So What's Your Story? Only on the listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 Houston or kpft.org for those of you who are using that avenue. But whatever road you took to tune in, we are happy you are with us. What is really scary is if you don't get to the Houston Storytellers Guild monthly story swap to learn great ways to tell stories of all kinds. Not to mention, you'll be learning about storytelling while hanging around the nicest, most supportive people around. Monthly swaps are held the third Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at St. Andrew's House, a beautiful venue located at 1811 Heights Boulevard. And check out the Houston Storytellers Guild site at www.houstonstorytellers.org for all the fun happenings, like the annual Liars Contest on Saturday, April 5th. That is an event you will not want to miss. In fact, Texas teller Sheila Starks Phillips, an award-winning liar, will be cracking you up more than you have ever thought possible when she is our guest April 3rd on So What's Your Story? To get ready for the Liars Contest, so don't even think about missing that show. And visit us on our So What's Your Story Facebook page for great information about storytelling, and please like us on the way out. Okay, Liz.
Yes.
I need some honesty. I have no idea what anthropology is. So can you please educate me on a little bit of what anthropology is?
Uh-oh.
Because I thought it was the study of bones. Like, I thought, like, for a while, like, it was like you were dusting off.
Yeah, that's a common misconception. Or really, it's only partially accurate. Well, bones would be paleontology.
Okay.
Digging up pottery and the like is a subfield of anthropology. That's archaeology.
Oh, okay.
So, and we do have, I'm at Rice, and we do have an archaeology department, or an archaeology component of our department. But my field is social or cultural anthropology. And we study everything about the way people behave. We study, for example, my research is on the media, so I study people like yourself. I follow media producers around and examine how they work, how they come up with ideas, what kind of content they're creating. But my research is in Japan, so it's on new technology, really.
Okay, because you told me about that, about how you're doing, and I'm like, what, in Japan? Like, I can barely even think about speaking the language, but I think that's cool that you're studying different.
Yeah, it can be difficult if you need a lot of fields need a lot of linguistic training.
So clearly you're fluent. You were able to text in Japanese of some sort in one of your stories.
I can text panicked things in Japanese when thinking somebody's being killed, yeah.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so how does storytelling and anthropology like kind of connect?
So I sort of alluded to it earlier, but I don't actually know any anthropologists who aren't good storytellers. We hear people's stories for a living. You know, we talk to people and find out, you know, about their everyday lived experiences. So we're constantly asking people for their stories, basically. And, you know, I think anthropologists, going to the big anthropology conferences is so much fun because these are people who just really love to talk about their experiences. I think there are a lot of people, anthropologists that I know, who could have either written in some other genre, could have written memoirs, could have written fiction, you know, are really just gifted in this way at storytelling, but chose to tell the stories of other people, really. So
that's so interesting because I really enjoy it. I know you told a lot of like personal stories, and then like the other two Moth people, Rabbi Laura and then Brendan, they all told personal stories. And I think that's like kind of my favorite story to listen to.
Yeah.
It's not like, I mean, I'm not saying like folk tales are so boring, but like I like hearing what happens to people, and I think that would be a really cool thing to study. Yeah.
I like to think that's why people actually read anthropology work, is because we do capture people's stories and what they're really doing out in the world right now.
That's so cool. I mean, I wish I knew about this field in college. So apparently you have you're very famous on Twitter.
No.
What are these Twitter postings I keep hearing about?
Oh, no. Actually, I think I'm quite the opposite. I make fun of my Twitter account because I never remember it's there. so I use it maybe once a year really to, we actually live tweet the big anthropology conference.
I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing with you. That's great.
Yeah, but I do tweet occasionally, but you know, I do tweet a fair bit about media, also about anthropology, and occasionally just because I've made some exciting new juice. The world should know about it.
Know about my juice. Oh my goodness.
So yeah, you can follow me if you want, if you're feeling especially benevolent and or drunk.
Yes, those are the best kind of followers, the drunk ones.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Liz, for your clever and creative telling style and your passion for story. So can we talk you into coming back anytime soon?
Anytime.
Yes, you have to bring more of your real life stories and your anthropology stories.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Wally, for helping me tonight, because you've helped calm my nerves in more ways than you can imagine.
Welcome, Roxy.
Sheila Starks Phillips will be teaching us how to lie like bandits next week, as she is primed for the Liars Contest. Sponsored by the Houston Storytellers Guild. In weeks to follow, we will have Hardwood Taylor and Christy Gorman, a comedic duo that will have you in stitches, and other treats included talented kids from Johnston Middle School. Don't touch that dial, because Scooter is next with the inner side to complete the backside of this Power Hour on KPFT. Make 90.1 a part of every day, and make it a habit to tune in every Thursday at 10 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And ease into the weekend right. Keep loving a great story, and I will keep bringing them to you or helping bring them to you. Be good to each other. And it's Dr. Hank. We'll be back next week, and as he has always said, and he wants me to remind you, that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Good night.